is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon, and thanks for being here. I wish we would have had the microphone on 30 seconds earlier as I did the weather. When I said rain, Kyle Reed just looked at me and said,
rain?
Yeah, boy, that'll be welcome. And who knows, it may not be very much, but the potential for rain, let's see here. Slight chance of rain Monday, then a chance of rain Monday night and Tuesday, and temperatures in the 70s.
We'll take anything we can get at this point.
Kyle Reed of the Douglas Forest Protective Association, the fire prevention officer. It's been a long couple days.
It really has. It was an amazing summer up until about 24 hours or so ago, and things just kind of went sideways on us very quickly with the conditions we were faced and the hot and dry temperatures and the east winds, basically worst-case scenario.
So originally we had State Representative Gary Leaf set to be in here today, and yesterday as this thing was evolving, I was wanting to probably get you or somebody back in, maybe Brad or Dell from the Sheriff's Office. Representative Leaf had the same idea, so we'll come back to him at another time. But talk about how we got from 24 hours ago. You were live out at Glide 24 hours ago right now. We had the Star Mountain Fire at around 300 acres. Archie Creek Fire was small at that point, starting to pick up. How do you get from 300 to 72,000 in 24 hours, actually less than 24 hours?
Just a really bad day. Like I mentioned before, the conditions were against us. The hot, dry temperatures, the drought that we're in, everything just kind of lined up. Go back a little bit farther in the day before our broadcast yesterday. We were out there on the French Creek Fire, and I got out there about 2 o'clock in the morning, and driving out there, it looked just like a winter storm. The number of branches that were down and the roadways and people's yards, I saw full trees had been blown over in people's yards. It was just amazing how strong those winds were. I've never seen anything like that in my 18 or so year career here at DFPA. I've seen that in Southern California on fires with the Santa Ana winds down there, but never anything during the peak of fire season in those conditions. So, we were up against some really hard conditions right off the bat. Luckily with that French Creek fire, we were able to get around that, get that stopped. Still, haven't got a really good idea GPS wise on how big, estimated 450, 500 acres or something like that. Again, most of that was just grass and brush, some hardwoods. But that was a challenge to hold on to even that fire throughout the day with the winds we saw. Once those other two fires started, that really changed everything for us. So we took quite a bit of the resources we had there off of French Creek and diverted them to the new startup river there. For us, it was the Star Mountain Fire, and trying to get a handle on that. And we had three helicopters on that thing in no time at all, trying to get that thing knocked down with water, and it was not happening. That fire was just outpacing everything we threw at it.
So give people kind of an idea of the geography. Lots of folks are familiar with the North Umpqua. People come from all over the world to go fishing up there and go to, Crater Lake, Diamond Lake, many other things as well. But sometimes we're not all that knowledgeable about specific distances between point A and B. So from Glide, the smaller fire was northwest of Glide. And where did the Star Mountain Fire begin? How far east of Glide?
Oh, I don't have the number of miles offhand, but it was there near Susan Creek Road, and the Archie Creek Fire was farther up. It was up towards Steamboat Creek. So again, I don't have those distances offhand, but it's quite a ways up the river there. Those fires took off, and when we talked on the radio yesterday, we were looking 300, 500 acres. Probably a little bit more than that. I get my information after the fact a lot of times, and it's not always real time. So it was probably a little bit bigger at that time than what I had the information for, but nowhere close to what we ended up with at the end of the day. Essentially I made it back out yesterday just about to the Narrows, and at that point we had fire down both sides of the highway there. Fire was getting back up towards the backside of Glide, kind of pushing down towards a little river country. This thing was just all over the place. It made it up over Rock Creek and is heading back down towards Hinkle Creek and Rock Island on that side towards Fair Oaks and pushing that way as well. So in terms of a fire scar, this thing is pretty large.
Now, last night, around 10 o'clock or so was when Glide and Idyllwild Park was evacuated. I didn't know that, of course, till early this morning. But even seeing some things that citizens, residents, some people that I knew, some that I didn't, had posted on social media last night of just the intensity, and maybe their home survived just fine. But I tell you, looking out your back window, it did not look good.
No, it didn't. And I've actually had a chance to talk to a couple of the people who had to evacuate and a moment's notice. And, they're still not sure what made it, what didn't, if they have a home to go back to. We're still trying to work to get back into some of those places to figure out what all survived. It was a bad situation all the way around.
And looking at now where we stand, 72,000 acres in the first 12 hours. With the cooler weather today, what do you know about the fire activity?
Yeah, so the forecast today was for similar conditions to what we've seen yesterday and the night prior, with east winds, hot temperatures, and low humidity readings. So I haven't made it back up to the fire line yet. Had a in-briefing this morning and just got bombarded with phone calls and emails trying to get caught up on. But it sounds like things have been a little calmer up there than what they were expecting so far. Hopefully that lasts. Nobody likes this smoke, but the one nice thing that it does provide is a little bit of relief from the temperatures. And when we do see these thick blankets of smoke, we typically don't get quite as warm as what they're forecasting. So that's one thing, I guess, if it's going to be smoky, at least it won't be quite as hot.
Now, this morning, the Weather Service was saying 95 for Roseburg. Late in the morning, they backed it down to 88, but right now it's 71. I don't think it's going to get to 88, so that should be helpful then.
Most definitely. The other thing, though, is, on the backside of that fire, once, if the smoke still is just heading downriver towards Roseburg, on the backside of that fire, it's still going to be fairly clean air, probably see a little bit of blue sky. So the other side of the fire may be a little bit more active than the west side, but who knows?
Now, I imagine, because you were up at Glide at the time, but I'm sure you saw later pictures of what Roseburg looked at around 1 o'clock yesterday when it looked like this thing was like a mile away. It was just very ominous. And in fact, when we got off with our interview yesterday, I headed back to my workspace and noticed two or three people heading outside. Didn't think much about it. Thought they were just going out for lunch or something. But they all had their cameras with them, and then they were muttering. And then somebody said, "Well, you should look outside." I walked outside, and it looked like a war zone that was that close to Roseburg, yet it was that far away. If it was that ominous for people here, what was it like where you were at Glide?
Yeah, it was. I've been in those situations before where the smoke gets real thick and all that. Probably about 2 o'clock or so, I walked out a station there at the fire station in Glide, helping Brad O'Dell with some of the evacuation notifications. And I'd walked out and the street lights were on. I thought, God, is it really that late already? And it was only like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And part of the problem for me was I'd been up a long time already. I'd been out to the French Creek fire since 2 o'clock that morning, and didn't get much sleep before that. So I was kind of tired to begin with then, but it is a really weird situation when, it's that dark that the street lights are coming on and it feels like it's dusk, and just very weird.
Yeah, definitely it was like that for us in Roseburg yesterday, but not to the intensity you're talking about. Kyle Reed is with us, fire prevention officer for the Douglas Forest Protective Association. We'll give you more on the Archie Creek fire when we come back. The interview will podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1245 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Douglas County, 1247, Lars Larson, coming tomorrow afternoon. Mental health focus on tomorrow's Inside Douglas County. Talking to one of the mental health professionals with Compass Behavioral Health, Kyle Reed of the Douglas Forest Protective Association, in here this afternoon talking about the Archie Creek fire. The merging of the Star Mountain Fire and the Archie Creek Fire were certainly expected. You talked about that even yesterday. Do you have a sense as to when that took place?
Offhand, I'm not exactly sure. You know, that afternoon time frame, I was upriver at one point there. It's again, it's all kind of blurring together, but the air attack was flying over, and at that point, he'd estimated both fires to be between 6,000 and 8,000 acres, and there was probably about a 2,000-acre gap or so between the two fires he estimated. So it happened a lot quicker than we thought it was going to once it happened. You know, that fire basically just stood up and started marching, and when it did, it really started moving.
So was it going, because both of these fires started quite a ways apart, were by the time it really got into full march, were they kind of marching towards each other, or how did that work?
No, not necessarily. Just those winds that we had, you know, really coming down canyon, you know, those east winds, so it's really pushing everything to the west. Once those fires do start getting close to each other, though, they are going to start, you know, influencing each other, and you know, essentially the two fires would suck themselves together and consume everything in that area. So yeah, they probably did influence each other a little bit, but a lot of it was just those winds that were just pushing those fuels. The humidity was so low yesterday. You know, typically for us, we're seeing humidities, you know, when you get down to about 20% in the afternoon, it's a bad day. And we were down to about 4% on some of the stations around the county. So just nothing was in our favor.
Wow. Pretty intense situation. And how far away do we have crews from working on this fire at this point?
You know, so at this point, resources have been somewhat limited. So we've got structural firefighters from a number of different agencies around Douglas County providing structure protection. We've got crews from DFPA and the Foreign Service engaged. We've got some contract crews and personnel engaged on the fire as well. And then, you know, we've got people from private industry as well that's got equipment and tenders and stuff like that up there. So there's people working on this fire. Part of this still comes back to, though, with a number of fires not only in Oregon and across the West, there's just not a lot of resources out there. So we're still trying to acquire what we need. And even if it's something we think we need, it may not be available, or it may be a while before it becomes available. So that's a huge part of this right now that we're working through, is just trying to be creative and be successful.
Is there a particular part of the fire area that the damage was more intense, or is it kind of spread around?
You know, a lot of this fire we haven't even been able to get back into yet. You know, a lot of that's going to come down the road when things cool off a little bit. You know, a lot of our focus right now is on the spread, so we haven't even been interior to a lot of these places after they've burnt yet.
Wow. And of course, that's, you know, the number one question people ask already. We're getting questions about, you know, did this location make it? Did that location make it? So basically, at this point, we really don't know.
Yeah. You know, I've been flooded with questions, emails, phone calls, text messages, you name it, from people, you know, and rightfully so, that have been affected by this. And they want to know, and, you know, if you have something to go back to or not. And, you know, at this point, you know, we don't have an answer to that. You know, talking to the structural resources, we do know that homes and outbuildings were lost on this fire. They're still trying to categorize where those were and which ones they were. We do know that DFPA lost our guard station up towards Rock Creek in this fire. But for every individual house, we're working on getting that information, and we're going to try and make it available as soon as possible. But at this point, it's not there yet.
Wow. For the people that live up there, I know that some folks, as this evolved, some people were, you know, trying to probably get things more defensible or whatever, and some folks got out of there pretty late last night. What is it like when you're up there late at night when it's dark and you've got a fire raging?
It's kind of eerie. You've got the glow, and depending on where you were at up there, it was all around you, you know, both sides of the highway, both sides of the river, and everything else. And the other thing that really stands out is when a fire really blows up and starts going off, it sounds like a jet engine just racing as it's burning through the stand of timber and stuff. And you could hear that off and on. You know, the trees that come down, the rocks. I was up there, up past Idlewild Trading Post up there yesterday, and just a huge rock came down and smashed into the ground. We've had reports up there of rocks coming down that are bigger than cars. So that's a big reason why the highway's closed right now, just for those safety concerns. But it makes for some pretty interesting times when there's not a lot of other noise in the area.
Yeah, I would imagine. And of course, this morning at some point, the roadway closure was expanded to the west end of Glide over there by which intersection was it?
Little River.
Little River, there we go. And then clear up to up by Highway 230. And I guess probably the idea is, even though maybe not all of that area is under the fire situation, some of that you really don't want people getting in there and getting any closer.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, on the west side of that, they moved that down to Little River because that's where the evacuations had been put in place. So that just made sense. No reason to let people drive around that don't need to be in that area to begin with after people are gone. So, yeah.
So, and talk about that aspect, because that was one of the things that Brad O'Dell mentioned at some point in the last 24 hours. It's blurry for me a bit, too, though certainly not as much for you because I didn't get a lot of sleep last night either. But have you had issues with people trying to get up? You've got the blockade area where it is, but did you have any issues with folks trying to get closer?
Not necessarily that I've heard of on this fire. You know, in the past, I know we've had instances where people have tried to get back in, and what their intentions were, I don't know. You know, a lot of it, you know, is for safety concern, but it's also for you know, people's property and protecting that. So that's one nice thing that we have here with the sheriff's office, is whenever we have evacuations, they dedicate staff to support that, make patrols, and make sure that people are not where they're not supposed to be. Probably the one thing, if I could stress the most right now, is if you're asked to leave due to an evacuation because of the fire, please leave. We had a number of people yesterday who chose to stay, and then once the fire started progressing on to their area, some of them had a change of heart, wanted to leave, wanted help, and we're not always able to go back up into those situations just due to the safety concerns for our firefighters, or the possibility of, you know, stuff coming down across the road and not allowing us in there in the first place. So again, if you're asked to leave, please, for your safety and everybody else's safety, please just evacuate out of that area.
And do we know if all of those folks did get out safely?
You know, I'm not sure. You know, there were people last night, we had reports of people who refused to leave. So, you know, we were going to be heading back up this morning to check on those, and I haven't heard how the outcome of that has been.
Now, the Northwest Incident Management Team 9 in already, where do they come from?
Yeah, so that's an interagency team, and they're out of the Northwest, obviously by the name, but they're made up by personnel from different agencies, and they're moved across the country as needed. So they, you know, they could be here, you know, this week, and they could be in another part of the country in 2 or 3 weeks on a different assignment if needed. So it's very similar to the incident management teams that the Department of Forestry have, other than it's just made up of different personnel.
About 15 seconds left. What about the fire danger? How do things still look in other areas around the region?
So we're still in extreme fire danger. The conditions we've had hasn't helped anything at all. So again, we're just asking everybody to do what they can to prevent new fire starts.
Kyle Reed of the Douglas Forest Protective Association. You heading back up to the fire area?
I'll be there most of the day.
All right. Thanks for coming in this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
1257 News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.